Good morning, and welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Good afternoon, hello, and welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. We're so delighted you're able to be with us this afternoon. This is an hour of mind power, where we bring to you people from all over the world, from all walks of life, telling their stories, sharing their experience, giving you insights into perhaps perspectives that you would not have considered before. And that is going to be the case this afternoon, as it usually is, but we're going to be talking about a sport this afternoon. You may think that's a little bit unusual on the Donna Sebo Show. Well, not really, because I cover all kinds of topics. We're going to be talking about boxing and an awesome book, I think it is very awesome, by Jim Lomason. I mispronounced his name. And it's titled Shadow Boxers, Sweat, Sacrifice, and the Will to Survive in American Boxing Gyms. Jim, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Donna. Nice to be here.
Well, I was so fascinated, first of all, when I got your book. I had no idea what I was going to have, and I was curious more than anything else when I found out that you had spent 10 years researching this sport, and you're a reporter, a photographer, you're out of Portland, Oregon. You and Catherine Dunn were awarded the 2004 Dorothea Lange Paul Taylor Prize by the Center for Documentary Studies at Duke University for this book. The two of you just did an absolutely incredible job. What was it that prompted you to explore a sport that has so many shadows? Your title, Shadow Boxer, is so appropriate. What made you decide that this was something you were going to sink your 10 teeth into, and why did it take 10 years?
Well, you know, it's really funny. I'm not a boxing fan at all. And, you know, I grew up watching boxing, sitting on my grandfather's knee, and I remember Cassius Clay, Muhammad Ali. But basically, I really didn't have an interest in boxing. And it, in a lot of ways, offended me like it offends a lot of people. You know, it's a mm-hmm. violent sport. And basically, I was pretty ignorant about a lot of the subtleties and the beauty and some of the things that go on in the gym. And I just happened to have a job shooting a piece of exercise equipment, and we used a boxing gym as a background. And when I walked into the gym, I smelled the smell, which is they refer to as boxing musk. And I listened to those sounds of leather pounding on leather, people skipping ropes, the sound of the boombox in the background. And I did my job. I took a picture of the exercise equipment, but I looked around and I thought, you know, there's something here, and it's a world that I know nothing about. And just my curiosity made me go back. And I went back and I started talking to one of the old trainers who basically just greeted me when I walked in. And his name was Jesse Sandoval, and he's about 70 years old. And he started, you know, just telling me about different fighters, showing me, you know, some of these old crinkly water-stained posters on the wall and snapshots. As he was talking, I was looking around at all the heavy bags with duct tape on and just this kind of grungy environment. But he talked with such reverence about the different fighters that he's known over the years and you know, some of the history of boxing locally, regionally, and nationally. And I felt like I was getting a tour through a boxing museum, and Jesse was the museum curator and really gave me a lot of insights into the world of boxing. And all the time he was talking, I was smelling, hearing, almost tasting this environment and watching these guys work so hard. I mean, I'd never seen anybody work as hard as these guys. And I mean, it was like being in a steel mill or a sweatshop. Basically, it's a fight factory.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, you know, there's something here, and I want to know more about it. I want to know what drives these guys. sometimes after I talked to some of these fighters, they would say things like, well, you know, I got in a fight Friday night in a bar, and, you know, and I was thinking, you know, I've been able to get through life without getting in a fight in a bar on a Friday night. And so there's something real different about these guys than myself, and I want to know more about it. And so the project started to really be about tough guys, and it wasn't until I got into the project for a number of years did I start to realize that there was something else going on in these gyms, and that's really what Shadow Boxers became about. But it took me a number of years and really trying to get rid of all the stereotypes and all the things that we believe about boxing that basically come through the media and all the stereotypes. And so I found something way different than what I thought I was looking at once I got into it farther.
Catherine, how did she become involved? I mean, this is the last place you'd expect that a woman would want to become involved with. And, of course, as a woman, I could say this. You know, mm-hmm. I'd say, gee whiz, that's the last place I'd want to be in, for heaven's sakes. I mean, just your photography in this book is incredible. It tells so much. And then Catherine, when she writes about this, it's as if she really got in to the taste, touch, feel, smell. She used all of her senses, and she conveys her perceptions so astutely.
Yeah, Catherine is a great writer. Her most famous book is called Geek Love, and it was a tremendous success, won several awards, and she's a terrific writer. But she's also been a boxing fan and a boxing writer for 20, 25 years. And I would bump into her, and she happens to be from Portland also, and I would bump into her at fights, and I'd also see her at some of the gyms, and, you know, we would nod, acknowledge each other. And, you know, I mentioned along the way that, you know, I'm working on a project. At that time, it wasn't a book project. It was just, I was operating out of curiosity, but I wanted to pursue this. And so we talked a little bit, and we would just say hello to each other every time we'd see each other. And then finally, once I realized that this is probably going to be a book, and I knew she was a fantastic boxing writer and a fantastic, very sensitive writer, I talked to her about the possibility of doing this, and she liked the photographs, and so we agreed to do it. And so every time I'd go out on the road, I would come back and I'd show her more pictures, and we didn't really know what her essay, and she basically wrote three essays, and she wrote the establishing essay called School of Hard Knocks. And so finally, when it came time for her to send me the transcript, she emailed it to me, and I read it, and it was spectacular. I mean, it was so touching and sensitive and honest, and I mean, I was really knocked out when I got it, and I forwarded it to my publisher, and I basically said, don't touch this, you know, mm-hmm. don't edit it at all, and he didn't, because it was so good. And, you know, Catherine has an understanding of what boxing really is, without romanticizing it, without demonizing it, just telling it as it is. And I mean, her essays are fantastic.
They really are.
And it really was important for me. I'm a photographer, but it was really important for me to have the essays. And there's about a dozen essays by different writers in this book. And I wanted these essays to be as good as Joyce Carol Oates' Reading the Fight. And so that was the standard I set for all the writers. And I talked to a number of the writers. My publisher talked to a number of them. And then there were a couple essays that were existing essays that we used. And they really all add up to paint a picture that you know, supports my photography. My photography supports the words. And so I think it all works really well together. And that, I wasn't interested in doing a book about Jim Lomason, photographer. I wanted to do a book about life in inner city boxing gyms, and that's really what the book's about.
Yes, and it relates the very human story of children, of young people, of adults, of coaches, and we'll get into that a little bit. I want to share the quote that you have in here from Muhammad Ali. The fight is won or lost far away from witnesses, behind the lines, in the gym, and out there on the road, long before I dance under those lights. And that is such a profound statement, because that is a statement that applies to just about any area of life.
Absolutely. And
I mean, it's all preparation. It's hard work. And these people that are the coaches are just incredible. Tell us a little bit about Joe Frazier. That was such a fun story, in my mind's view, because it took you a while before you were able to get an interview with this very famous man.
Absolutely. You know, and I often show up cold to gyms in the different cities that I go to. Sometimes I have a job photographing something else, and then I add a couple days onto my shoot, wherever that might be, and I go to those gyms. And I went to Philadelphia, and Philadelphia is really the epicenter of American boxing. There's great, great gyms there, and they are tough gyms, and there are neighborhoods that are just devastated. I mean, we really shouldn't have neighborhoods this destroyed in America. I mean, it's really a tragedy that that there are situations like this that exist in a country like this that has the riches that we have. And we went to some gyms that were in bombed out neighborhoods, and they were great gyms. We got to know the fighters and the trainers, and everybody has always welcomed us with open arms, even though they don't know we're even coming. And I would show pictures along the way, and then they would let me take pictures, and then I'd become invisible and work. But one of the only, I think, two gyms in the whole 10-year period that wouldn't let me take pictures was Joe Frazier's gym. And all over the front door of the gym, there are signs that say, no pictures, photographers keep out. And to me, that's an invitation. That says, I got to go. And so, you know, I tried to talk my way in a couple times, and I didn't get very far. And finally, somebody gave me Joe Frazier's phone number. So I called up Joe, and I told him what I was doing. And Joe referred me to his son, Marvis. And he said, call Marvis. And so I called Marvis, and Marvis said, call Joe. And then I called Joe and said that Marvis said, call. You know, so we went around in circles for a long time, and ultimately I didn't get in. And so finally, after five or six attempts to talk my way in, I just gave up. And then my publisher, as we were closing in on our deadlines to go to print, called Joe and asked him and showed him the pictures and asked him if he would write a foreword for the book. And Joe loved the photography, and he wanted to be involved. And he said, I'll write the foreword on one condition. That's that Jim comes and photographs my gym. So I went back to Philadelphia, and I photographed in Joe's gym, and he showed up in a tuxedo with a cowboy hat and strutted around, and he was a great guy, and we took pictures, and you know, it was a great experience, but it was a long battle to get there.
Well, I want to share what Joe Frazier said to you and what you have in the book. Not only had he had a passion for boxing since the age of 8, but he goes through the description of what he did. But any person, anybody that comes into his gym, especially the young ones, and he encourages the young ones to come in. In fact, he encourages his own daughter to come in, and we'll get into the fact that women are really becoming more and more interested in actually participating in this sport. But his statement is, I'm going to read it exactly from your book, because boxing isn't just about learning to fight. It is also about learning discipline, leadership, and the value of hard work. At the Joe Frazier Gym, we have 5 rules of respect, and we expect everybody to follow them, whether they're amateurs or professionals, young or old. Number 1 is respect God. Number 2 is respect your mother and father. Number 3 is respect your brothers and sisters. Number 4 is respect others. And number 5 is respect yourself. If you remember those 5 rules of respect, you'll be all right. And I look at this photo of Joe Frazier and his son. And these young kids, they look like they're about, 8 years of age, 9. They're pretty young. And they're there because of the man, Joe Frazier, to a degree. But they're also there because they've got an environment that gives them a very healthy perspective.
Absolutely.
Now, this environment that they are living in, this is a tough environment. And most of us, for whatever reason, we're not in it, and I'm very grateful for that. We don't realize how tough it is and how they must fight. And that's where most of the boxers come from. They don't come from the upper class, do they?
No. And, you know, if I had to say, you know, in one or two sentences what Shadow Boxers is about, and it actually took me 5 or 6 years to realize what Shadow Boxers was going to be about, and that's the role of the gym in inner-city neighborhoods and the role of the gym in the lives of especially kids in those neighborhoods. And, you know, as I was thinking I was doing a book about tough guys, and this happened in Philadelphia. You know, we'd gone to these really great gyms, the James Shuler Gym and the Front Street Gym, and, you know, the trainers in those gyms can really tell you how many guys have been killed on each corner around the gym. So these are really mean streets. But we saw this amazing, nurturing, mentoring situation going on with these old trainers, you know, and when you think of, you know, the generation gap, and you see these, you know, 8 or 9 year old kids walk into a gym, and the respect they have for these trainers is amazing. I mean, it's always a complicated handshake, a hug, a nod before they start working, and so there's this amazing relationship. And when we were in Philadelphia, we kept hearing about a gym called Champs, and everybody said that's where the best fighters come from, but we would go to that neighborhood. And so these are tough guys saying they would go to that neighborhood. And again, for me, that's an invitation. I have to go. And so we looked around for Champs. It wasn't easy to find. And we, you know, asked a few people on the street, and we found the gym. And it's in a neighborhood that looks like probably Baghdad right now. And we walk in, and there's this trainer, Bowie Fisher, who's trained Champions, Bernard Hopkins and several others, and he's working with an 8 or 9 year old kid, and there's, you know, contenders standing around waiting their turn, and he's giving this kid as much attention as he gives anybody else in the gym. And then we learn that he demands that kids present their report cards to get in the gym, and they have to keep their grades up, which is an amazing message. Mm-hmm. And contrary to all of our beliefs about boxing, that he wants these kids to understand that an education is more important to Bowie Fisher, this great trainer, than them becoming great fighters. And basically the gyms take a kid from, you know, 8 to 18, give them an environment that's probably safer than a lot of other places in their lives, and give them discipline and something to work at. And, you know, that time off the street and getting a little self-respect and, you know, becoming their own person is a very valuable thing. It doesn't work for everybody. Not everybody survives, but it does help a lot of kids to just have a sense of self and maybe avoid some of the seductions of the street and also learn to defend themselves. And, you know, so there's a lot of benefits. I also don't want to glorify boxing, but I also don't want to demonize it. And what I found in these gyms is an amazing, you know, relationship that, you know, some of these trainers are father figures to hundreds of kids, and that's an important thing.
Well, I want to share a couple of quotes you have. One is Sonny Liston, who is very well known as a fighter, and his statement was, ever since he was born, he had been fighting for his life. He came up through the, what might be considered the wrong side of the tracks, and Rocky Graziano. He said, boxing's a terrible sport, but it's a sport, and the fight for survival is the fight. Every one of these men that have evolved in this sport, that have become world-recognized for it, have had to fight so very, very hard, figuratively, literally, to become what they wanted to become. And they had to go on, like Joe Frazier did, to another level. And Joe Frazier did something that so many people, if they have something to offer, whether it's in boxing or anything else, do, they pass it along to the young people. And I just have such an appreciation of the photos of the young people that you have in here and the information that you share, that it's a school of hard knocks. And they just... they're in there, and they're in there because they want to be in there. Nobody's dragging them in. Nobody's dragging them in. They're going in there because it gives them a chance to be around some men that are going to give them a good example of integrity, even though the sport is as rough as it is. It's like any sport. It takes a lot of discipline. It takes a lot of hard work. It takes commitment. Look at how popular the movie Rocky was.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, the gyms are also racially neutral, gender neutral, age neutral. I mean, they really are an environment that's real different from, you know, most of the world outside the gym. And, you know, so there's something there. I mean, I've gone to fights where, you know, it's basically our gym rooting for our gym and their gym rooting for their gym. And it's whether it's a woman fighting or a kid or older kid, you know, it's, there really is a camaraderie. And, you know, some gyms are open on Thanksgiving and serve turkey dinner, you know, just because it's a place to go. And other gyms take kids on field trips. And, you know, so you know, and again, I don't want to paint it as, you know, the Cub Scouts, but there is something real close to that in as far as, you know, that mentoring aspect to it. And you know, it's so contrary to what we hear about, you know, exploitive mm-hmm. promoters, and certainly all those guys do exist, you know, but what I really discovered and wasn't looking for was this amazing kind of nurturing, mentoring aspect.
Yes, and a culture in and of itself, mm-hmm. all by itself.
With its own language and,
right.
you know, I mean, with its own goals. And we all participate in groups like that, whether it's a group of photographers, you know, or a group mm-hmm. of whatever, you know, and, you know, if you're in that boxing world, you know the language, you know the heroes, and you get very educated in that world. And it is a disciplined kind of violence, which is real different from the chaotic violence just 2 inches through that door on the outside on the street.
And one of the points that you bring out, one of many points, and again, I'm talking with Jim Lomason, and his wonderful book is Shadow Boxers, The Sweat, the Sacrifice, and the Will to Survive in American Boxing Gyms. And again, you may think this is sort of strange, Donna. Why would you even consider talking about boxing? That seems so far removed from a positioning of empowering people. But what I think it does, Jim, what you've done with this book, you have given a perspective with integrity of a world that most people in America do not live in. They don't see it. They watch a little bit of what they think it is on the news when there's a riot or something else that's going on, but they're not aware of the levels of poverty and certain environments that people live in that demand a reality of understanding. And that's what your book offers. Your book offers a real level of perception that I think opens one's eyes. Doesn't glamorize it. You're not doing that at all. But it's giving an insight into a real ruggedness. And I liked what you said about the gyms in a way in the neighborhood sometimes that these are located in would remind you of Baghdad.
Right.
I mean, you're looking, they're a war zone.
Yeah, they are.
They really are a war zone. And here you have these sanctuaries that enable that reality to be dealt with, and yet there is a culture there that says, be on top of things, be aware. Look at what you can do. You can be an adult. And these men often are wonderful fathers. They'll bring their children with them. Everybody is so caring.
Well, yeah.
And it totally, totally destroys so much of the myth that has been out there. So I just think this book is wonderful. Now, I know we can get this in any bookstore, Shadow Boxers. And for those of you listening, if you have young people, and this may sound rather odd coming from me, but I think so many times in today's world, we want to protect and insulate our children from certain realities in life. And what Jim does with his book is show a side of life and how people are dealing with it in a constructive way via a sport that allows a lot of what might be considered anger that might be demonstrated out in the street somewhere in a negative way, perhaps harming someone. Instead, it's in a disciplined environment run by mature men who really understand life with a depth that maybe some of these young people can't possibly fathom. Jim, do you have a website that people can go to?
Yeah, it's lomasonpictures.com/shadowboxers, and it's a long one. You can also Google Shadow Boxers Lamason or Shadow Boxers Stone Creek, and it'll take you to a number of reviews, and you can get to my website too. But Lamason Pictures is a tough one, just because I have a long name.
And let's spell that: Lomassoon. That's L like Lucy, O M Mary, M Mary, A S Sam, S Sam, O N. Jim, it has been absolutely wonderful having you as a guest. What thought would you like to leave with us?
Well, you know, it really, you know, one of the things you mentioned about the family affair, and when I think of that, you know, I remember a gym, a particular gym in L.A., Azteca Gym, and that gym is full of, you know, moms and brothers and sisters, and, you know, they come with a picnic basket with food, and they sit there a half a day, and it really is kind of the clubhouse for the whole family and the kids. You know, it's this amazing, you know, world. And then another gym that I thought was a great one was the East Oakland Gym in Oakland, California. And they have like an after-school program with computers and all kinds of stuff. And the gym is the magnet, but then they start working on the computer and doing theater and dance,
mm-hmm,
and all kinds of stuff. And that's really, you know, what the book became about. And that's you know, just the role that these gyms play in the community, and it's an amazing world.
It truly is, and it's a world that so many of us would never have an opportunity to even explore, and you've given us that opportunity. Shadow Boxers, Sweat Sacrifice, and the Will to Survive in American Boxing Gym. Jim Lomason, thank you again for being my guest.
Thanks, Donna, for having me.
It's been my pleasure. Donna Sebo here. We are going to be taking a break in just a moment. When we come back, those telephone lines will be open, and if you'd like to call in and let me light up your life with a little insight, 877-876-5227. Don't go away. We'll be back in just a moment.
Enter the magical world of God's Kiss.
Johnny finds himself at the entrance to a large open valley, framed by high mountains rich in the brown red colors of the earth. He stands in awe, even a little fearful of the mountain's great size. After all, he's just a little boy and not very tall.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling, and the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com. That 800 number again,
872-8852. Hi, this is Donna Sebo with an hour of mind power. And there's so much to share with you today, but I want you to know, if you'd like to call in and chat with me, the telephone number to call in to is 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Now, by the way, I also want to remind you, don't forget that we are going to be having shows that will be archived. So if you've missed any of the programmings here on BBS Radio that mean something to you and you go, oh, darn, I wasn't able to hear it, well, just remember, before you know it, we're going to be having those shows archived so you don't have to miss anything, and you'll be able to listen at your convenience, and that is important. We all have busy, busy schedules. By the way, I wanted to share a little bit of scientific information with you here. There is a thought about finding out more about the brain. I say a thought. That's probably not the right way to put this concept that I wanted to share with you. The most considered, let me get my words right. I've got to wrap my mouth around the words. The most complex object in the universe, in the minds of many researchers, is the human brain. And the brain's most complex creation is the computer. And we all are so involved with computers. Now, there are some neuroscientists, and they're from Switzerland. And they're, along with some computer engineers, they really want to do something that we've heard about in sci-fi for goodness gracious, as far back as I can remember, and that is programming a computer to create a brain. Now, you'll see programs on television, as I have I mean, they're always showing so much information about this research discovery. You know, MIT is one of the facilities in this country that will often come forward with some of the most innovative ideas. There are think tanks for a lot of major companies, people. They have ideas out of the box, and they'll say, what can we do? Can we make something work? Which is really exciting. And that's a good thing for us to remember about everyday life, is to maybe think outside the box. However, these scientists, in collaboration with IBM, are launching the effort by building a computer model of the neurocortical column of a rat. Now, this is a single circuit of about 10,000 cells, each of which is capable of thousands of connections. Now, that's a little mind-boggling, isn't it? I mean, we have, I don't know that they actually have the exact count of cells in the brain, but this is just with the one neocortical column of a rat. Now, the rat brain information is being downloaded into IBM's Blue Gene computer. Yes, they've called it the Blue Gene, G-E-N-E. And it can crunch through 22 trillion operations per second. Can you wrap your mind about that number? 22 trillion operations per second? Now, this first model they're working with is going to depict only the electrical activity of the neurons. Future versions are also going to simulate chemicals in the brain. Now, of interest because of the combination of electricity and chemistry that may cause thought. Now, eventually, as the simulations become more sophisticated and computer technology advances, the team hopes to replicate the entire rat brain. From there, they're going to work their way up to humans, they hope, eventually creating a computer version accurate enough to be used to research normal and abnormal brain activity. Boy, did you know that all that stuff was going on inside of you? It's amazing. You're just an amazing human being when you think of all this brain activity that you don't give yourself too much credit for. Now, there's a lot of critics that say there's too much mystery surrounding the goings-on of neurons to create an accurate computer reproduction. However, there's a project leader, Henry Markram, of the Swiss Federal Institute of Technology in Lausanne, that believes that he's accumulated enough data to get things started. He said the first goal is to understand this neocortical column. He said, if we understand that, I believe we're going to crack the main difficulties of understanding how the brain processes, stores, and retrieves information. And that alone is an immense achievement. Now, I know some of you listening to that say, oh, it's terrible that they're doing this. But you know what? I think there is so much to understand, whether it's in a plant, whether it is in an animal, a rat, is us, and the more we can research, the more we can learn, the more we have people that are willing to explore, the more we're going to be able to help. And I think one of the biggest areas that this can work in is in the area of medicine. And I say this, and I say this with utmost sincerity. I have had just a conversation this morning with someone who has a very, very dear friend who's going through a very critical medical situation. And one of the biggest challenges that any medical practitioner has is, how can I help someone? Do I have enough knowledge? And so often we compartmentalize things. We'll figure that someone in the medical field should know all the answers. In fact, I think that's one of our biggest weaknesses when it comes to medicine. We don't understand. And we get angry when someone can't fix everything. But if we are willing to explore, if we're willing to ask questions, if we're willing to learn, and we're willing to link up with other people that have a curiosity level themselves and say, what if this is an option? Can you imagine the strides that can be made? When I think of the steps forward that are being made in medicine, because there are so many people, lay people as well as professional people, scientists, individuals that want to make a difference, it is so significant. Someone once made a comment to me that the reason we have been able to make so many advances is that there are less and less of us that are having to work behind a plow, and there are more and more of us that are getting educations and growing and developing our levels of knowledge. And that's so important for you to remember, because no matter who you are, I don't care what age you are, You can learn something new, and you can make a difference right where you are, right in the manner of living that you're living, and you can make a difference. Let me share something with you. I was invited to a high school graduation. Yes, a high school graduation. No big deal, okay? You'll say, oh, I've been to those, Donna. That's a wonderful thing. That's fun. What's a big deal about a high school graduation? Well, this high school graduation was a big deal because the person that was being honored at this high school graduation was a great, great, great grandmother of 93 years of age. Yes, this woman, when she stepped up to get her diploma, the entire auditorium of people filled that had come in. I mean, it was standing room only in this auditorium. And we stood up and applauded this woman. We didn't have a clue. One, she didn't look 93. But two, who would have thought someone at that age would have been interested in going and getting their high school diploma? Well, her story was fascinating. She had dropped out of high school to have a family. And then what occurred with her is that not only had she taken care of a family, but there were so many different difficulties that she had had to go through with friends and other persons in the family, grandkids, all kinds of things, and she was there for everybody. And finally, in her 80s, she said, well, I think I've taken care of everybody. I'm going to go get my high school diploma. Do you know what? That family supported her, and they were there cheering her when she graduated. But she was the one that did the work. She passed all the tests. She did it with flying colors. And her last statement before she left the podium is that she was looking, going after her bachelor's degree. So, if you don't believe that you can do something, remember that 93-year-old grandmother. She made such an impression on me. And I can remember, I had tears in my eyes because I thought, what courage it took. How many of us would have been willing to stand up in front of a whole group of strangers plus a lot of family and saying, here I am, I did it. So many people I've known have said, I'm too old, or I'm too this, I'm too that, I'm too the other. You're never, ever too old, you're never too stupid, you're never too anything. You are who you are. And if you have a dream, if you have a passion, if you have something that is inside of you that's talking to you and you want to feed it with understanding, education. Choose the people you want to be around. Choose your environment. But understand, it's going to take work. There's no shortcuts in life. Nobody's going to hand it to you on a silver platter. It doesn't work that way. You know why it doesn't work that way? Because there's something called self-respect. And for some reason within us as human beings, if we don't earn it, we don't appreciate it. We don't respect it. And I don't care what your age is. So just keep in mind, these scientists that are working on the brain, these scientists that are exploring concepts and ideas, it may one day be able to save a life. It may one day enable us to understand more about learning capabilities, and people that might have learning disabilities will be able to help them in ways we couldn't have done before. So science, it's a good thing. Can it be abused? Of course. But look at how many people are not. Look at how many people want to do something good with what they're learning. And you can be one of those, too. And did you have any idea that you have that much going on in your brain department? Hey, you're a lot more savvy than you ever, ever could realize. Give yourself credit for that. This is Donna Siebel. We are going to be taking a break. When we come back, I'm going to be sharing something about blue jeans. Yes, but they're not blue jeans. They're called green jeans. And then I've got some other good things that I want to share with you this afternoon. So don't go away. They've got more to share with you, and we'll be back.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Siebel to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 877 877- 877-876-5227, and I'll be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of insight. Now, I did want to let you know about my guests that are going to be coming up. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking about natural beauty basics. Dori Byers is going to be my guest, and she's a nurse, and she became very much involved in healthy cosmetics. And this is something that can benefit the guys as well as the gals, but I think we gals are more interested in this, to be perfectly frank. But I'll tell you what, a lot of fellas have an interest on looking good. So this is a way of finding out the best way and the natural way to take care of yourself and to look good. Also, we're going to be having Wes Moss on Friday. We're going to be talking about starting from scratch. And this is really good information because it's information that helps you to understand that no matter where you are, it's a good place to begin, period. And then we're going to be having next week, we've got Stevia Sweet Recipes. Now, Jeffrey Goetmuller is going to be my guest, and he is a man that has done so much research into this. Stevia has an awesome history. So we're going to be finding out about that, and then we're also going to find out about some delicious recipes that you can use. And then there is Jay Scott. This is a father that is going to share a wonderful story about the very, very special child, Alex, and her lemonade stand. Believe me, it'll touch your heart and mind. Then we're going to be talking with Carrie Broussard, her Cinderella story. Yes, that's exactly what it's going to be. And then Clifford, we're going to be talking with him, Clifford J. Fazzolari, a nice paisano. We're going to be talking on Counting on a Miracle, and this is about his son. This is a story that will also touch your heart. And then, have you ever asked the question, hey God, why has this happened to me? What's going on? Why me? Well, Dr. Jeanette Freeman is going to help us deal with that question. I certainly have been in that situation, and I'm sure you have too. We often wonder if the universe is for us or against us. And also, if you're like me, sometimes you put in calls to the customer service department in the universal communication system, and you find you're not getting any answers, and you go, excuse me, I just don't care for this. I'm not liking the service I'm getting. I want somebody to resolve the situation now. Well, again, Dr. Jeanette Freeman is going to help us answer that. People are always coming up with wonderful ideas, wonderful innovations, and when I came across this information about blue jeans, I had to chuckle, because in my wildest dreams, I would never have imagined that you'd use blue jeans for insulation. It was just not in my thinking. Well, this is something that is caught on, and there is a company, Bonded Logic Inc., and it's out of Arizona. It makes insulation from recycled jeans. Who would have thought? Now, the jeans, the zippers are removed before the jeans are shredded. And I know some of you young people out there might say, oh, shred jeans, oh my goodness, that's an abomination. Well, there's a time when jeans really need to be shredded. And they then turn this into a type of natural batting. And the insulation result is so strong, it's good enough to withstand severe winters. Now, recently, the Ralph Lauren Polo Jeans Company sponsored college campus denim drives and collected 6,700 pairs of jeans for this company, Bonded Logic. Now, what this batting does, the batting is going to insulate a five-story building in the Bronx, which Habitat for Humanity, New York City, is refurbishing. Isn't this amazing? It helps to make the dream of home ownership come true for a lot of hardworking people who really need it. Now, Roland Lewis, he is the executive director of Habitat for Humanity in New York City, and this building is going to house 8 low-income families. Now, if you'd like to know more about this, want to know more about Bonded Logic's insulation, yes, you may have some jeans you want to send them. All you have to do is go to their website, bondedlogic.com. That's B-O-N-D-E-D, logic.com. And if you'd like to get involved with the Habitat for Humanity, who is very much involved with this project in New York, you can go to habitat.org. That's habitat.org. People come up with these ideas. I just don't know where they come up with them. I honestly don't. And that's what I dearly love. When I was talking to you earlier about think tanks, it's amazing. You can get a group of people together in a room. They can come from all kinds of backgrounds. and you can toss an idea out and ask them, what do you think? What ideas do you have? What can you do? And you know what? You will get ideas sometimes that are so far off the wall that you'll sit there and you'll chuckle to yourself. And you'll say, this is totally insane. But there have been a lot of things that have been considered totally insane that have actually come about to be something very, very positive. You know, Post-it notes? That was an accident. The glue for Post-it notes, that was an accidental discovery. But there is something about the human mind that when you have more than one level of input, when you can bring things together, stuff starts happening. It's absolutely amazing. And I'll tell you, I never cease to be surprised at how the universe works in so many ways. And I don't care what your background is, what your faith is, doesn't make any difference. There is something magical about life and the way things work. And there is a woman, Heather, who has a special story to tell. And she was talking to her husband, Andrew, and I'm going to try to make this quick. She said she was putting numbers into a calculator, and she and her husband had always dreamed about going away someplace special for their 10th anniversary. But she said, when you have four kids, your mom's ill, and you got a pile of bills, where are you going to go? You just don't have the money for it. Well, guess what happened? She went shopping with her daughters, and they were grocery shopping. And one of the kids said, oh, Mom, can we please buy this tub of meringue cookies? And being a practical mother, I've been there. I know what you say is, nope, don't think so. No room in the budget for trifles. And then something funny happened to her. She had this strange feeling. And she looked at these cookies, and she looked at her kids, and she said, you know what? I'm going to get them. And she said, let's go home and have a party. So she did that. What she found is that they had an advertisement on this batch of cookies. It said, there is a contest, and you can be a winner. Do you know what? She entered that contest. She sent a photo of what she baked and a copy of trifle recipe. Do you know what she won? And guess what? She won a trip to a place that she and her husband had wanted to go. All expenses paid. Like I said, you never know how the universe is going to work. It can be a cookie recipe or something that's going to give you what you most deeply desire. Donna Sebo here. We're out of time. It has been absolutely wonderful spending this hour with you. No matter where you are, what you're doing, know that you're a gift. Yes, you are. But you need to unwrap yourself so that we can find out what's inside of you. You're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Open yourself up and let your light shine. You do make a difference. Donna Sebo here. God bless. Talk with you tomorrow.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.